Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nidah. Daf Nun. We're behind. We're back on Memches and Mevayz. Okay. We talked about who's doing the bedikas. Okay. We've established already now for the past number of days. that in order for a woman to be considered an adult, she needs shteitz aras. Right. The simen tachton is the real simen. The simen elyon is just a simen. It's just an indicator, but it's not the actual. Actual mechanism which transform her from being a minor to an adult. That is the Simen Tachton, and that is more specifically the Shtei Sa'aros. So who's doing these bedikas? Who's checking her? So it's, as mentioned yesterday, it's women. So women are going to do a bedika. But the difficulty with that, of course, is that then the woman has to testify. So a woman testifying about whether she's an adult or a minor, so that's going to be somewhat of an issue. So let's go back over again, Tana Rabbanan, and we're going to start in the middle of the Amud. We're going to start with the Braisa. We're going to read the Braisa. Braisa is going to have a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And we'll get clarity on the Braisa. I didn't explain the Braisa all that well yesterday. It was the last thing we did. So let's start there again, Tana Rabbanan. Kol nivdakos nivdakos apinashim. So all these bedikas are done through a woman. A woman's going to do the bedika. V'chein ha'yarebi Eliezer, Marcel Ishto, Rabbi Eliezer, when he had a woman, a young girl, come over to him, so he'd send her to his wife, to have his wife do the bedika. And Rabbi Yishmael, Marcel Ima, and Rabbi Yishmael sent her to his mother. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lifnei Aperek La'achar Pek. Sorry, now let me not go quickly over here. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lifnei Aperek La'achar Pek Nashim Bot Gososan, Etoch Aperek Ein Nashim Bot Genosan, Shein Mesin Sfeikos Api Nashim. Okay, so Rav Yehuda says like this. Look, we're going to have three time periods of this young girl's life, right? These time periods we've gone through over before. Before 11, from 11 to 12, and from 12 and up. Okay, now, before 11 is called nothing. Let's just review. She's a katana from the time she goes up until 12 years of age. Once she hits her 12th birthday, she no longer is a katana, she's a nara. But that, of course, is provided that she has shtei saros, she has her two hairs. Then from 12 to, let's say, 6 more months, that's Shmuel's halacha, from 12 until 12 and a half, she's a nara. But as a nara, as I'm trying to impress upon you, she's an adult, meaning under the jurisdiction of her father, but once she's 12 years of age, she's an adult. For the next 6 months, she's in the status of Nara, which means that her father still has rights over her. And then from 12 and a half up and above, she's a Bogeris. Okay. Now, in terms of when these women are doing a Bedika, so according to Rav Yehuda, from anywhere from before, to be Lifnei HaPerek, which means before she's 11 years of age, you can have women doing Bedikas. And after 12 years of age, you can also have women doing Bedikas. But from 11 to 12, a woman cannot do a Bedika. Okay, now why? What's behind that? So Rashi explains like this. I'll say it outside. Because before 11 years of age, we're looking at it, and it's definitely not a hair. Meaning, it won't take a rocket scientist, you don't need a doctor. In other words, it simply will not be a hair before 11. Well, what is it? Meaning it kind of looks like a hair? We'll say it's a growth, a mole, a growth, whatever the case is. It's simply not a hair before 11 years of age. After 12 years of age, all right, in other words, she probably has hairs. Meaning, remember, we discussed this in the past, Chazaka the Rava, there's a general presumption that at 12 years of age, she's growing hair. So in other words,
from age 11 to 12, did she have another name?
Huh? No, wait. I'll get to that in just a second. Okay, in other words, really, this woman, the one who's doing the bedika, the one who's doing the examination, she's not making any type of really bold declaration. In other words, before 11 years of age, when she's looking at it, she's going to render the position that, oh, it's not a hair. Okay, it's almost self-evident. Meaning, it's almost like we didn't even need her to look at the area and to tell us. But, okay, after 12 years of age, it's also not such a bold prediction. Oh, what I saw is I saw a hair. That's kind of what we expected. Meaning, she's 12 years of age. We have a general presumption that they grow hair after 12 years of age. Okay, that's kind of what we expected. All right, so in other words, there's not much in terms of bold predictions being made or any type of radical opinion being said. From 11 to 12, this is again the opinion of Rav Yehuda, she can't look at it. Why? So as the Gemara itself will explain, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that if she develops hairs between 11 and 12, she becomes an adult. Right? Do you remember this was subject to a debate just a couple of days ago? Well, we're revisiting the debate. According to Rav Yehuda, if she were to grow hair between 11 to 12, so then she is considered to be an adult. Fine. So now, if you have a woman doing a bedikah on this girl, somewhere between the age of 11 and 12, and now the declaration is, oh, I saw a hair, so now she's making a very, very, not radical, but she's making a strong opinion that this girl, who we didn't think was an adult, is now considered to be an adult. She's eligible for chalitza, eligible for yibum, right? All the rules of being an adult. She's now an adult. And for that, that's too much testimony for a woman. Meaning that's too much credibility that we cannot give, we cannot afford to a woman, because simply because women don't have that kind of credibility in terms of testifying. As I mentioned yesterday, in other areas of halacha, like by Issa V'Heter, they can testify. But over here, we're talking much more than Issa V'Heter. We're talking about Arayas, the Issa of Arayas. Meaning, based on this testimony, this girl now could do chalitza. And now that she did chalitza, she's allowed to marry another man.
Right.
This could potentially be Arayas. Because it could be that she's not an adult.
Kids could be mamzerim.
And the kids could potentially be mamzerim. So this is an issue of Arayas. So Rav Yehuda says, no, a woman cannot look at her from the ages of 11 to 12. Now, the obvious question that you really need to ask me is the following. Huh?
Who's
going to
do it?
Well, who's going to do it? Okay, fine. That's a fair question. I'm not sure if I'm ready to address that. the other, I guess I would say, obvious question is, so she's doing a bedika before 11, why does she even need to do a bedika? Meaning if anyway, whatever grows is going to, we're just going to simply declare it to be a growth, a mole, and it's not going to be a hair, so why are we having her look at all? What would be the point of her looking before 11 years of age? So to that, Rashi says the following. Look, remember what we said earlier? What we would do is, and I don't know if they would take out a pen, and this is extraordinarily awkward, but they would identify that growth, and then they would, you know, put a little circle around it, and then when she turns, you know, over 11, when she turns over 12, and all she still has is that very same growth, so then what we would say is that's not a hair. How do I know that? Because historically we know that that was a growth that grew before she was 11 years of age. That can't go from being a status of just being a growth to where now after she's 12 years of age, now we're going to call that a hair. That doesn't, we don't do that type of conversion. In other words, at 12 years of age, she would need to grow two additional hairs over what was identified from before 11. So there would be some sort of efficacy of a bedika that's done before 11 years of age. Okay. All this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara and the Braisa continues. Rabbi Shimon Omer, okay, they can even do an examination, meaning during this time from being 11 to 12, you can have a woman do an examination. So, but, even when we do this examination, and even when a woman who did the examination renders an opinion, the only thing we'll follow is a chumrah, but not necessarily a kula. Ketzad. So the Gemara says, let's go over some examples of what we would listen to. Meaning, gedola hishlo tema'ein. If the position was, look, she's in a situation where she could still, maybe she could still do mi'un. Married off, this young girl was married off by her brother or by her mother. The marriage is only midrabanan. Until she becomes an adult, she can opt out of this marriage. This is called mian. Once she becomes an adult, she can no longer opt out of the marriage. So if the position that was rendered, the opinion that was rendered is, I saw a hair, I saw two hairs, she's an adult now, she cannot leave this marriage, that's a chumrah. Okay, that we'll listen to. Or ketani hishalo tachlos. Or if the opinion was, let's say this woman was subject to a chalitza opportunity, which means that she was married off by her father. Right, there's a different case. Married off by her father. So even though she was married off as a minor, but the marriage is a marriage midaraisa. And her husband died. And her brother-in-law now does not want to do yibam. Only wants to do chalitza. But the rule is you can only do chalitza with an adult. She's not yet an adult. So if now, let's say, a woman looked at her, she had an examination, and the opinion that was rendered is, I did not see, and therefore she's not eligible for chalitza, that we'll listen to, because that's a chumrah.
So what's the difference? Is, uh, why doing Vedika anyways? It's win-win, same question.
Okay.
Right, you could just wait either way.
Okay, understood. Fair point. But if the opinion that's being rendered now is going to result in a kula, i.e. she could still do mian, i.e. she is eligible, she's still, she's now an adult and eligible for chalitza, that no. Okay, so the Adkan, that is the end of the Braisa. Okay, so basically, what the Braisa says is, first of all, who does the examination? That's women. When can the examination be performed? That's a machlokus in the Braisa between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Just to review, Rabbi Yehuda says that you can do a bedika before 11 and after 12, but not between 11 and 12. According to Rabbi Shimon, you can do a bedika before 11, after 12, and in between 11 and 12 as well. And then the Braisa caps off by saying, but even after a bedika is being done, we're only going to listen to her lakula and not lachamra. And the explanation is very straightforward, because she's a woman, and there's only so much credibility that's going to be afforded to her.
How do we establish, what it leaves is, how do you establish lakula? What is the procedure to go at lakula? If you want to gear it up,
right,
who's going to examine her and establish that you can do it?
Right. It's a reasonable question. I don't have a great answer. Amar Mar. So now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to pick apart the Braisa bit by bit. A lot of the explanation I gave already, but the Gemara is going to spell it out. Amar Mar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lefnei Aperek Lacha Aperek Neshem Bokter Son Bishlam Lefnei Aperek by Vedika Di Mishach Lacha Aperek Shemanenu. Right, we explained this already, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, what would be the point? What's the efficacy of doing a bedika before she's 11? Anyway, we know it's not a hair. We know it's just a growth. What would be the point? So the point would be that once we identify it and we circle it, so then at a later point in time, when she's after 12 years of age, and this is all she has to, this is all she still has got going, and she doesn't have any other hairs, we're just going to simply disqualify it and say, look, we knew it was a growth before 11, it's still a growth, meaning it's not a hair. So Elal Achar Perek Lamali Bedika VaAmar Rav Ketana Sheigil Lachlosh Nosei Nasricha Bedika Chazak Yevis Imanim. So the Gemara says, but why are we doing a Bedika after 12? Don't we have Chazaka the Rava? Don't we have a general presumption that after 12 she has heirs? So what's the point of doing a Bedika? So Amar Rav Chazak Lamina VaLachalitza by Bedika. So the Gemara says, and this is not the first time we're hearing this, that even Chazaka the Rava will only tell us that she's a Gedola vis-a-vis Chumras. But she won't be a Gedola vis-a-vis... No, I didn't say it right. She's a Gedola vis-a-vis... Yeah. She's a Gedola vis-a-vis Chumra, but she won't be a Gedola vis-a-vis Kulos. So in other words, to tell her you can't do Mian anymore, fine, meaning you're too old. But to tell her you're eligible for Chalitza, no. In other words, that's not going to be good enough. Toch HaPerek. Now, so far we've explained the position of Yehuda of before 11. And after 12, now we need to explain from 11 to 12. So as I explained back when we did the Braisa, but here the Gemara spells it out, what Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that if she were to grow a hair between 11 to 12, that would be considered a hair. And it would register as an adult. But here's the problem. After 12 years of age, not only does she do a bedika, but the bedika is supported by the chazaka. Meaning there's a general presumption that a girl after 12 years of age has hair. So you have that and her bedika. So you're not giving her all that credibility. It's not resting on her shoulders. It's being shared by what she saw, plus the general presumption, the chazaka, that most women at that age have hair. However, from 11 to 12, you don't have the chazaka, and now you're establishing her to be an adult. All the credibility now is falling on the shoulders of the woman who's doing a bedika. That's too much. And so therefore, that's why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no point in doing a bedika from 11 to 12. Rabbi Shimon, we go on now in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon Omer Aftocha Perek Nashim Bot Gun Hassan Kesav Atocha Perek Lefnei Aperek Ubay Bedika Di Mishach Lach Aperek Shimon Inu. Okay, so, and what's Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Rabbi Shimon fundamentally disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. He feels that hair grown from 11 to 12 is not hair. It's still just a growth. And so therefore, when the woman looks at her, even from 11 to 12, the conclusion cannot be that they're an adult. There's no such thing as a girl from 11 to 12 who's going to be an adult. But again, that would be the same point that we mentioned earlier. You can identify it as a growth, circle it, And then, at a later point in time, if that's the only thing she has, disqualify it as a hair.
When does her Narus
appear? And that's after she turns 12. After she turns 12, and she has two hairs. Now, Haiman. And then, what did the Braisa say? The Braisa says, and even when we do listen to her, we only listen to her as a chumra, not as a kula. So, who is the author of that statement of the Braisa? Well, you have two choices. It's either going to be Rabbi Huda or it's going to be Rabbi Shimon. So, man ketan la'i ba'isema Rabbi Huda v'atocha perek. So one explanation would be that it's talking about Rabbi Yehuda and it's talking about Tocha Perek, meaning from 11 to 12. So even when Rabbi Yehuda says that we won't listen to her, that means vis-a-vis a kula. But if she wants to say a chumra, by all means, let her say a chumra. Or if you would like, we could say it's going like Rabbi Shimon. It's talking about Achar Perek, and Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to the Chazaka de Rava once. Funny, this is the first time the Gemara challenges Chazaka de Rava, meaning makes a suggestion that someone doesn't subscribe to the Chazaka de Rava, but the Gemara is doing it. If you don't subscribe to Chazaka de Rava, so the only thing establishing her to be an adult is the examination, and even though it's after 12 years of age, but if once you don't have Chazaka de Rava, so then everything falls on the testifier, and the testifier in this case is a woman, so the Gemara says so. The only thing she could say is a Chumra, but she cannot say a Kula. Okay.
So what do you mean the case of 11 to 12?
Huh?
11 to 12, so what's
the halacha, the halacha follows like Rabbi Shimon. Meaning that you could do an examination, but it does, from 11 to 12, but she's not gonna be an adult. Meaning the only thing that can be identified is that I saw growth, but not a hair.
If the brother in law wants to do chalitza, can he wait until the 1 or 2 years?
Yeah. For sure. Absolutely. No, 100%. Okay, and now we are finishing up. We have a little bit more of the Mishnah, and it's, if you take a look back, go back to the Mishnah, so it's the first Mishnah of the sixth parak, and the Mishnah ends off by saying, that last line of the Mishnah, last two lines of the Mishnah, they said, okay, like a summary statement of the Mishnah. So you know how the Gemara feels about these summary statements. They're not necessary. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, when he wrote the Mishnah, wrote it as concisely as possible, right? He did not want to write long, he did not want to elaborate, and he did not want to repeat himself. So why is he repeating himself in our Mishnah? This is exactly what bothers the Gemara. Hasu lamali. Why is this in the Mishnah? Hatan l'resha v'chitem mishum tekabai l'mista makarabanan. And maybe you want to tell me, well, remember, there was a debate in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and Reb Meir. And Reb Meir is of the opinion that you can have the Siman Elyon Kam before the Siman Tachton. And so maybe the Mishnah just wants to reiterate how this is not the accepted position, but the Chachamim is the accepted position. The Gemara says, I don't need Rabbi Yehuda Nasi for that. The Gemara says, V'chitem ha-mishim dekabayin l'mistam ha-karabanan, pshita, it's obvious. Yachid v'rabim halacha karabim. We know that when you have a debate between a group versus a single person, so that single person's position is not the accepted position. So, and it's Rabbi Meir on top of that. What do I mean by that? Right, lo yara l'sof datan shel Rabbi Meir. Meaning Rabbi Meir's positions are, generally speaking, unique, uncharacteristic, hard to understand. Right, this is not me talking, that's how the Gemara describes Rabbi Meir. Okay, so in other words, so we know the halacha is not like Rabbi Meir. So ma'u detema mistarba time of Rabbi Meir to come Israeli cry. But if you remember back to yesterday's daf, we quoted two psukim out of Yecheskel. Both seem to indicate that you can have the development of the Siman Elyon come before the Siman Tachton. And what we had to do is we had to reinterpret both of those psukim. But kipshuto, the simple pshat of those psukim, do follow like Rabbi Meir. So maybe now that you have Rabbi Meir and supported by psukim in Tanakh, so the Gemara says, I might have thought, So that's why I needed the Mishnah to reinforce the position of the Chachamim, because you have psukim that really do support Ramer. Ibai Thema, Mishim Dekabai Lamista, Kayot Sebo. Or maybe, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi does this in the Mishnayos, it's a setup. meaning he writes those last words in the Mishnah to set us up for the next Mishnah, for the upcoming Mishnah. The Mishnah now, Kayotze, both similarly, and you're going to see now we're about to start a whole series of Mishnayos which are going to follow in the same line of thinking, the same logical sequence as our Mishnah over here. Okay? So that's a what a fantastic segue to start our next Mishnah. Okay, what is the logical sequence? The logical sequence of our first Mishnah of the sixth parak of Nida is, well, you can have a Siman Tachton and follow them by Siman Elyon. You can't have the Siman Elyon follow them by the Siman Tachton. Meaning, when you have A, there could be B, but when you have B, you can't have A. I know I sound like I'm teaching a logic class, but that's basically what the first Mishnah is teaching us. And so now we're going to find other areas in Halacha where it's going to follow the same pattern of logic. Where you can have A, you'll definitely have B, but if you have B, you won't necessarily have A. Okay, so let's see. Our Mishnah now is going to give three examples of that, just this Mishnah alone. And then as we go on in the Mishnayos, you're going to see the Mishnayos are going to do this in a couple of other ways as well. All right, so Kayotsebo, there are three other examples in this particular Mishnah. Number one, Kli Cheres. Now, Kli Cheres is earthenware. Earthenware jars have unique halachic characteristics. Okay, so I'm not holding an earthenware jug in my hand, I'm holding a styrofoam cup.
Make believe.
Yeah. Okay, now. You don't want those
cups.
Huh? Yeah, remember? Okay, so I'm holding a styrofoam cup in my hand, but if you can imagine now, if this is Kli Cheres. So the first thing that we already know about Kli Cheres is the following. It's an interesting halacha. Is that it contracts tumah, even if the source of tumah doesn't actually make contact with the cup itself, as long as the source of tumah goes into the interior of the cup, so now the cup is going to become tameh, right? So it's metameh b'tocha. Not only that, but it's enam tamei megabo, meaning it does not come, it does not become tamei from the outside, but only from the inside. Remember, once it becomes tamei, the whole kli becomes tamei, right? Don't confuse it. There are other areas of halacha where only part of the kli becomes tamei, not the whole kli becomes tamei, but in a kli cheres, the whole kli will become tamei. Okay? If I have food in the cup, just to illustrate this by way of another example, if I have food in the cup and I take a source of tumah, I take a dead sheretz, and I put it into the interior of the cup, even though it doesn't touch the food, so watch, the cup now becomes tameh, a rishon l'tumah, the food that's inside becomes a sheni l'tumah. Okay, very straightforward, ABCs of conveyance of tumah in a kli cheres. Now this is a general rule by all kalim, and that's the following, once the kli breaks, it no longer can accept tumah. Meaning part of the very nature of a kli becoming tameh is that it's a functional kli.
It has to be whole.
It has to be whole. It has to have utility. Once it's no longer a functional kli, so therefore it's not going to be mekabel tumah.
But if it is tameh and it breaks?
And if it's tameh and it breaks, it actually loses its tumah.
Right, right. Okay. There's a chip on the edge.
Now, in the world of kli cheres, earthenware jugs, so earthenware is the kind of thing where it breaks, you could still salvage. Meaning you can take a shard of an earthenware jug, and as long as it still has some sort of interior to it, so you could still use it. You could still make use out of the shards of kli cheres. So when a kli cheres breaks, that's not the end-all be-all of the kli, meaning that it's very possible that you could still use it. So what we're going to learn in the Mishnah is that there are certain holes which would disqualify it as a kli, and there are certain holes which won't disqualify it as a kli at all. So, says the Mishnah, Kayotze Bo. Kol kli cheresu machnis motzi, v'yesha motzi v'ena machnis. I'm not going to do this because I really enjoy this cup of coffee, but if you can imagine right now, and it's going to get messy. If I were to make now a perforation towards the lower portion of the cup, so what's going to happen, right, with my trusty pen over here, so what's going to happen is, obviously would create a leak. And the liquid would come out. Now what the Mishnah here describes is the following. There basically are two different types of size holes that I can make. I can make a hole that's oh so small that the only thing that it would do is it would allow liquid to come out, but not necessarily liquid to come in. Meaning that, in other words, inside now I have liquid, and because it's contained in an area, it creates a certain amount of pressure, so that if I make just a very tiny hole because of the pressure, So now the liquid's going to come out. That's what's called motzi. Okay. However, because the hole's so small, it wouldn't necessarily allow water to come in. Now, what you could argue is that if I put water with a tremendous amount of pressure, that could come in as well. The Gemara later on will point out that's subject to a debate. Whether or not I can water from the external water with pressure coming in, is that considered machnis, yes or no? The Gemara later on will have a debate about that. But just to make right now life simple and the discussion right now simple, so if the hole's so small that it only allows egress but doesn't allow entrance, that's what's called motzi. I can make the hole larger, which not only would allow water to come out, but it would also allow water to come in. Okay, so here's example number one of where there's A, there's B, but there's not necessarily the reverse. Where there's B, there may not necessarily be A. And here it's very simple. Kol kli cheresh u'machnis motzi. If the hole is big enough where it allows water to come into the kli, obviously that hole would be big enough to allow water to come out. However, yesh motzi ve'eino machnis. But sometimes the hole is so small, it only allows water to come out, but not water to come in. Okay.
That's
going to lose
its status as a
kli. Oh, so just give me a moment. We're going to talk about that. Two, said the second example of the Mishnah. Yei kol eiver sheish motzi parin. Now, let's go over some basic rules of Tumas Meis. We're going to be all over the place. Meaning, once these Mishnayos now are giving other examples of the same logical sequence, so we're going to give examples that are just cover the gamut of halacha, just to illustrate the logical progression. Now, here's what we know. You have human remains, so it gives off tumen one of three ways. Maga, touching, masa, carrying, and ohel, being under the same roof. However, that's not universal. Meaning, for maga and for masa, so you have any amount of human remains, and even if it's not even flesh, if it's just bone, as long as it's the size of an adasha, as long as it's the size of a lentil bean, so it will give off tumas maga or masa, both contact and carry. So you pick up a bone, you touch a bone, you're going to become tummy. What about ohel? Ohel is much more specific. For ohel, you either need kezias min ames, you need actual kezias, an olive, the volume of an olive of human flesh, or you need the majority of the bone structure of a human human remains. There are 248 bones of the human body. Again, we modern medicine counts it differently, but fine. The 248 bones of the human body, and you need the majority of them or the majority of the skeletal structure.
Or the majority of the shedrum.
Meaning the length of the body. Oh. The femur, vertebrae, enough that would get you through.
So if you have maybe like 10 bones, and you have...
You may be able to cover it. There's one other way to transmit tumas ohel, and that's with an aver. If you have a full limb of a body, so that's going to give off tumas ohel, even though it doesn't have kezias min ames. And it certainly doesn't have the majority of the bone structure of the human. Nevertheless, if you have a limb, so if let's say you have a finger, for example, so that will give off tumas ohel. So there are three ways of human remains to give off tumas ohel: kezias min ames, majority of the skeletal structure, or an aver. Now, what the Mishnah over here is describing is how are we going to define an aver? So the Mishnah says like this: if it has a fingernail, it's a no-brainer, an absolute no-brainer. Kol etzem sheyesh bo, I'm sorry, kol aver sheyesh bo tziporin yesh bo etzem. So if it's got a fingernail, it's got a bone. All right? In other words, I know it's hard to imagine now looking at my fingers that, you know, because we're obviously talking about human remains, but if it's got a fingernail, it definitely qualifies as a limb because it for sure will have a bone. However, but the opposite won't necessarily be true. If it has a bone, it won't necessarily have a fingernail. Okay.
That's like the alien and the top 10 in the
period. Correct. Same logical sequence. And finally, the third example is kolam etame medras metame etame meis, v'yesha etame etame meis v'enam etame medras. And finally, the following. I'm sitting on the chair over here. Now, we all know that if I were a Zav, okay, terrible example, but if I were a Zav, so the chair that I'm sitting on over here becomes Tameh. it becomes tame, even if I don't actually physically come into contact with the chair. In other words, let's say I put a cushion underneath me, between what separates me and the chair. Doesn't matter, the chair is still going to become tame. And as we all know, the chair becomes tame to the same degree of tame that I am. I'm an avatama, the chair is also an avatama. Okay. And so, if something is eligible to become tame through an avatama, through tumas medris, it for sure will be eligible to become tame through tumas meis. So that means that if there's a dead body in this room, and now the tumah goes up and covers the entire roof and comes back down again, the chair is going to be tameh. But the opposite is not necessarily true. If something's subject to becoming tameh tumas meis, it won't necessarily become subject to tumas medras. For example, something that was not meant to be sat on. So if I took a bucket, and the bucket is not something that normally people sit on, and I turn the bucket upside down and sit on the bucket, and Amazav, is that bucket going to become tummy tumas medras? No. Will it become tummy tumas mace? Yes. So if something's eligible to become medras, it for sure is eligible to become tummy tumas mace, but the opposite is not necessarily true. Okay, so once again, you see that same logical sequence. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to start with the Gemara step by step. Machnis pasol. Look, if you have, we'll go back to the hole in the cup. If the hole is so small, so tiny, that the only thing that it could do is, if the hole is not so tiny, but water can come in and water can come out, so now the Kli Cheres is possible. It's possible a Mechatas and it's possible a Gistera. Now, Mechatas is the following. We know that if you want to mix together the mayim of mayim chayim, the spring water, together with the ashes of the paraduma, you have to put it inside a kli. Right? The Torah says el keli. Okay, you have to put it inside of a kli and mix it inside of a kli. If there's a perforation in the kli, it does not have anymore the shame kli, and so therefore you were not mikadesh. You didn't sanctify the Afer Paraduma together with the spring water. Okay, so it has to be a kli that is without perforation. If it has a perforation that is machnis, where the water can come in, that means it's a larger size perforation. That's it, it's done. You can't use it as a kli. And on top of that, remember how we talked about with earthenware, if it breaks, the shards are still salvageable. But once the shard itself has a small perforation in it, the shard is no good. Meaning at that point in time, it's lost. It's a lost cause. So, machnis pasul lemechatzos pasul mishum gistera. Motzi, however, if it's a really small perforation where it only allows water to come out, but water can't come in, so kashul lemechatzos. As far as being mechatzos is concerned, it's okay. Now, it's funny, it's okay. You're going to pour the spring water in. You're going to pour the ashes of the paraduma in. It's going to leak a little bit. But in other words, I guess it's...
If you can find a paraduma,
you can find it. Correct. At this point in time, you really should. You went through a lot of trouble getting to this point. You really should find a kli that doesn't have a hole in it. But the point is... because the perforation is so small, and because it only allows liquid to come out and not to come in, it doesn't lose its shame kli, and therefore can be used to be mikadesh. However, pas mishum gistera, but as a gistera, meaning, if this was a broken shard of earthenware and had this hole, even though this is such a tiny hole, nevertheless, the gistera is no longer considered a gistera. The Gemara is about to explain why. Why should that be? Because it's already broken. So in other words, if it's broken and then has a small hole in it, in other words, it's like buying a used car and then something happens, something is wrong with the used car and it's like, it's already used, it's like, you know, you're putting bad money into bad money. And trust me, I've been there, I've done that. So Amar Ravasi Shonin, Ravasi says like this, Shonin says, Rashi halach lemoshe misinai, meaning this is simply all part of the oral tradition. You're not going to find any of this in the Torah. Kli cheres shiro bekones mashke. When you're talking about kli cheres, the shear is kones mashka, meaning water is able to come in. Not just water is able to come out, but water is able to come in as well. That's how big the hole in the cup has to be. Now, motzi is a shear, but only for gistera, meaning the hole is so small it only allows water to come out. That would be a disqualifier, but only in the world of a gistera, only in the world of a broken shard. My time on Marzucha Breder Rav Nachman Lefishein Omrim Havai Gistera La Gistera, because it's a shard for a shard, meaning it's so broken, and now it's got a hole in it, and it's done, it's over. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Now, on a different day, I go through the Rashi. I just want to point it out to you. The Rashi over here, Shiruk Konis Mashka, Rashi goes through a Kli Cheres, five different Shiurim in a Kli Cheres. Two of them we already expressed, Motzi versus Machnis. There are three others to talk about. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi goes through the other three. But I'd like to go on because we have an opportunity to catch up. Tana Rabbanan Ketzav Bokin Kli Cheres Lei Dem Nikev Kekones Mashke Imlav. So what's the test? Meaning? So here we go. Here's my cup, and it's got a small hole in it, and I see that liquid's coming out. So I know it's a motzi. Is it also a machnis? So now the Gemara is going to give us, it's a brisa. The brisa is going to give us various ways of testing it out to see whether or not it's a machnis, whether water can come in. So leidei nikev kekones mashkim lav yavi areva malei amayim v'nosin keder lasocha im kansha biyadusha kekones mashkev im lav biyadusha motzi mashkev. So the first illustration is going to be extraordinarily straightforward, very simple. Sorry, Ben, I forgot to ask permission. Okay, so I'm going to take now my cup with a small hole in it. Good. So I'll take my cup with a small hole in it. And if I poured water in, I'll see that it'll come leaking. I don't have to illustrate that. And I'm just going to simply take it into another cup that obviously has water in it. And then I'm going to watch and observe and see if water actually penetrates in. Okay, that's test number one. And if water doesn't come in, obviously you know that it's only a motzi and it's not a machnis. Okay, done. V'imla v'yadusha motzi mashka. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say the following. No, Omer. Kofef aznei keder alasocho, umeitzef alehem mayim, v'im konis biyadusha konis mashka, v'imla biyadusha motzi mashka. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Here's what you do. Pour it upside down. Put it upside down. And now pour water over it. And now see if water is going to come in. And then you're obviously going to turn it over. And now you're going to see if water is going to come in. Okay, that is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tana Kama? Obviously, yes. But what's the Nekuda Machlokas? What are they arguing about? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that. V'im konis biyadusha konis mashka, v'im la biyadusha motzi mashka. Oh, sofsa agabe ha'or. The Gemara gives another illustration, another test that a person can do. Sofso gabe or put it over a fire. Im ha'or ma'amida biyadusha motzi mashka, v'im la biyadusha machnis mashka. In other words, put it over a fire, and apparently, I mean, obviously the heat's going to kind of put pressure on that area over here. If water refuses to come out because of the heat, so now you know it's only a motzi and it's not also a machnis. Okay.
The fire's not going to make it like a kiln and reseal it?
Maybe, I don't know. Perhaps. Imor ma'amida biyadusha motzi mashka, v'imla biyadusha machnis mashka. Rav Yosi Amar, aflo sofsa agabe or, mimnesha or ma'amida, elo sofsa agabe haremetz, imremetz ma'amida biyadusha motzi mashka, v'imla biyadua shekones mashka. Now, Rabbi Yossi says, don't put it directly over a fire, put it over coals. Fire is going to be too strong and too powerful, it'll stop anything from coming out. Right. Now, my Ika bein Tanakama la Rav Yehuda. Now, remember, we started off with two different tests, the Tanakama test versus the Rav Yehuda test. Now, the Tanakama will tell you, take the Kli Cheres with a small hole and put it into a cup of water or a barrel of water. And Rav Yehuda says, no, turn it upside down and pour water over it. What's the difference? The Gemara says, "Ma'ika ben Tana Kama Rabbi Yehuda Amar Ula Kenas Ayidei Chakika Benayu." Yeah. In other words, look. When I put water inside, when I put this cup inside another water, so now not only am I allowing water to come in, but I'm putting pressure on it. So in other words, that's water coming in Ayidei Adchak. That's with pressure. And what Rabbi Yehuda objects to is the idea that no, that's not going to be the definition of machnis. The definition of machnis is when water comes in without pressure. Meaning, why do you think the water's coming out? The water's coming out because there's pressure pushing the water outside. So then Rav Yehuda says, so then there's really no difference between, according to you, between Machnas versus Motzi. Meaning when you put this inside another thing and there's water now pushing it inside, that's with pressure. So Rav Yehuda says, I object. The test to see whether or not it's a real Machnas is by turning it upside down and pouring water on top of it and seeing whether water comes in without the pressure. Okay. Now we talk about the Avar and we talk about the limbs.
Which one do we go with?
Yeah, fair. Which test do we work with? I didn't look up, to be honest with you.
It should be
the Tanakhama. Okay. 19th parak of Hilchos Kalim. Okay.
It's right here.
Oh, you have the Rambam's?
No.
19th parak of Hilchos Kalim. You're right, the Rambam.
I have it on my phone.
You're not going to find this in the Shulchan Aruch. None of this discussion you'll find in the Shulchan Aruch. Now we're up to Aver, call Aver Sheish Bot Sipar. Now, by the way, I didn't make this point in the Mishnah. Let me make this point right now. We're talking about Avar, we're talking about limbs. So we're talking about digits of a hand, digits of a foot. Okay, we're talking about limbs. But really, in truth also, I didn't make this clear in the Mishnah, we're talking about an extra digit. Okay. How many times are you going to have to hear from me the story of Antonio Fonseca, picture of the Miami Marlins? Isn't that funny? Of the Florida Marlins, who had an extra digit on both of his hands. And by the way, he had also extra digits on both of his feet as well. Okay, so he was born with an extra finger. Actually, it came out over here. And now you'll say that it gives him an unfair advantage as a pitcher, but for those of you who know anything about pitching, you only pitch with really three fingers. Yeah, there's a four finger. You could have a four. Okay, but anyway, so it didn't really help him much. And to me, the more interesting part is how to get the glove on the other hand.
Right.
Right. That's going to be the more interesting part. So, the last thing I'm going to waste your time with is that he had probably the best nickname in all of baseball. He was Hispanic. He doesn't speak a word of English. His nickname was El Pulpo, which in Spanish means the octopus, which... Self-evident.
Even though
Hectopus. Okay. So, I'm sorry. I waste your time with this. So anyway, what we're describing over here is the following. Meaning that if you have a regular digit of one of your five fingers, obviously that's an aver, that's obviously going to be Matam and Thomas Mace. What the Mishnah here is describing is the following. What about that extra digit? Meaning, now, sometimes that extra digit has, it's just tissue. Meaning, what do? They cut it off, right? If it's just a little bit of tissue. Yeah. So a little surgery, a little excision, they cut it off. But sometimes, though, it has bone and it's, you know, and it behaves like another finger. So what the Mishnah here is describing is that if it's got a fingernail, like nothing more to talk about. Like slam dunk. Meaning that's considered an aver. The discussion that we're having is, what if this extra digit doesn't have a fingernail? So then you got to probe. They got to go one step further and you got to find out, does it have a bone or does it not have a bone? If it's got a fingernail, it for sure has a bone. But if it doesn't have a fingernail, so then you probe further to see whether it has or it doesn't have a bone. Right? And you see how that logic follows the same pattern as what we've been describing up until now. Yesh bo tzipor metame b'magav masa v'ol, yesh bo etzem v'ein bo tzipor metame b'magav masa v'ein metame b'ohal. Okay, and so the Gemara quotes I don't know what this is. It's a Mishnah, it's a Braisa. I'm not really sure what I'm reading right now. But anyway, but if it doesn't have a fingernail, and all it has is just a bone, it's not metame b'ohal, because it's not an aver. Amra av chisad av zeh Rabbeinu HaGadol Amro. This is what Rav said, Rabbeinu HaGadol. Rabbeinu HaGadol, whenever Rav Chisda says that, he's referring to Rav, that was his Rebbe. V'amakum yebezro, and God should help him. I don't know why he says that. I'd be interested to know if anyone has anything to say about that. V'amakum yebezro, etzbe yester sheish bo etzem, ve'in bo tzipar metame magav amasa, ve'in metame ba'owel. So, the extra digit, if it doesn't have a fingernail, it's not an aver, it doesn't qualify as an aver, and therefore it's not metame ba'ohel. It's only metame b'magav amasa, meaning we'll treat it like a bone, but we don't treat it like an aver. And Amar Rabba Babachan Amar Rav Yochanan Kishen in Espres Agav Ayad. And that's only when it's not counted with the rest of his fingers. Meaning, if that extra digit kind of lines up with his other five fingers, So now he's able to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
6.
I don't got it. But in other words, it comes out like that 6. So that then we treat it like an aver, even without a fingernail. But if it kind of comes out awkwardly, where it's not really counted with the rest of his fingers, so and it doesn't have a fingernail, it's not considered an extra digit. Call metame medras, call the chaza medras metame mez, v'yesh metame metame mez, v'yesh metame medras. Lasuye mai, lasuye sa'a v'tarkav. Buckets, big buckets. Buckets that hold the sa'a, buckets that hold a tarkav. Tarkav is a bucket that holds 3 kabin. Tar from the word tray, kav, which means one kav, it's 2 plus 1. Okay. The Tanya Vayoshev Akli Yachol Kafa Sa Vyashavalah O Tarka Vyashavalah Yetame. Now here's what I might have thought. I take this bucket, I turn it upside down, I sit down on it, and I'm a Zav. I might have thought that this bucket now is Metame Tumas Medris. So no, Asher Yeshevalah Zav. Mishim Yuchar Li Yeshiva. It has to be something which was built for the purpose of sitting. This, however, zeshomim lo amod v'nasem lachteino. However, after taking your coffee break, now your friend says to you, "Okay, get up because we need the bucket now because we need to go back to work." That's not designated a yeshiva. It will not be metame tumas medras. It has to be something specifically designated for yeshiva. Okay, we have time.
4 minutes.
Yeah, we have time. Okay. Kolsher Arayli Dan Dine Nefashos Arayli Dan Dine Mamonos V'Yeshar Arayli Dan Dine Mamonos V'Arayli Dan Dine Nefashos. You look at the Gemara Sanhedrin, Masechta Sanhedrin, and it's basically broken up into two halves. The first half of Masechta Sanhedrin, not the first half, like the first 3 or 4 parakim talk about setting up a court for monetary law, and the second half of Masechta Sanhedrin talks about setting up a court for capital crime. Okay, and to be eligible for Dina Nefashos does not mean necessarily, sorry, other way around. If you're eligible to sit on a capital court, to be a judge on a capital court, you're for sure going to be eligible to sit on a monetary court. However, the opposite is not necessarily true. You may be eligible to sit on a monetary court, but you won't be able to sit on a capital court. Now, the Mishnah doesn't really tell us who's eligible and who's not, but we'll get to that in just a second. V'yeshu ra'la dan din imamnos v'enim ra'la dan din nefashos. Amar Rav Yehuda, lasui imamzer. And who are we talking about? We're talking about the mamzer. The mamzer can sit on a monetary court, but he cannot sit on a capital court. Now, why should that be? The Gemara does not explain why. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi on the Gemara. Kashla din imamnos v'pasla din nefashos. Kedich siv. He quotes a pasuk from Shir Hashirim, Kulach Yafeh Ra Yasi. Right? It's a blemish. It's considered a blemish vis-a-vis the capital court. Now, why specifically is that pasuk addressing the capital crime versus a monetary crime? I totally forgot. All right, I'll have to look that up. So, Aveina Kol Kshirim Ladun Din Nefashos V'Avinam Ba. So I'm sorry, I skipped. Tanina Chadazimna, so the Gemara says, okay, but the truth be told is that we learned this. We did all this in Masechta Sanhedrin, third parak. HaKol Kshirla Dun Din Imamunos Veina Kol Kshirla Dun Din Imfashos V'Avinimah L'Asui Imai V'Amar Rav Yehuda L'Asui Imamzer. So in other words, in this Mishnah Nida, I understand why it's here, because it follows the same logic, but it's a retread. We did all this in Masechta Sanhedrin. So what are we gaining over here? So Chad L'Asui Giver, Chad L'Asui Imamzer. Oh, so because there are two people that fit this bill. One is a mamzer, as we just described, and the other one is a convert. Utzricha di e ashmiinan ger mishum derai lava bekal. Now look, each one of them has a plus and a minus. When it comes to a ger, so a ger can marry into the congregation. Right? Jew can marry ger. Right? Born Jew can marry a convert. But that's obviously not true by a mamzer. Now when it comes to the mamzer, okay, mamzer is born with issues, but at least comes from Jewish seed. But ger does not come from Jewish seed. So, right, one check for the mamzer, right, and not a check for the ger. So they both have issues, separate issues, so I need a mishnah that would tell me that a ger could be judged for monetary law, and another mishnah to tell me that a mamzer could be a judge for monetary law, and that's why I need both mishnayos. Okay. We'll pause over here. And tomorrow, pick it up at the very bottom. Okay. Testifying. Kol HaKasher LaHa'id. Okay. Are there more? Okay. We're going to be on these tangents for a little bit now.